You are listening to Something Rather Than Nothing. Creator and host, Ken Vellante. Editor and producer, Peter Bauer.
This is Ken Vellante with Something Rather Than Nothing podcast, and I am so pleased to have Nancy Hauser-Bloom, who is an author, a speech-language practitioner, a thinker, a blogger, an explorer. So she seemed to have the best attributes to come on to the podcast. Nancy, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm very excited to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you as a guest. I wanted to ask you right off the bat. You have different talents. You've done different things. But the first question is, were you an artist? Were you a creator when you were born?
You know, I think my knee-jerk reaction when I thought that might be a question was probably no. But because it took me a long time to consider myself creative. But I was always a writer, always a journaler, always writing some little thing, loved words, and I surrounded myself with people, and you know, that were very creative from the traditional point of view, good artists, you know, that type of thing. And so I was always measuring with that bar, but because I was always writing and drawing a little bit, I was thinking about that. I was really good at drawing trees, which seems, you know, that came into my head today as I was thinking about that, I thought that's coincidental. I mean, lots of people draw trees well, but I felt like that was my one little gift, you know, if we had to draw something spontaneously. So I think I always liked creativity, but writing was the way I found my voice because I didn't necessarily grow up feeling like I just, you know, communicated my ideas well to people. And it was through writing that I did that.
Yeah. Yeah. And no, I appreciate you saying that. And of course, as we get into it, there are, you know, what I would say, wonderful and deep components connected to trees and to nature, you know, that come about, in your book that we'll mm-hmm. discuss. In hearing you mention that, you know, you'd be drawn to drawing, you know, trees when you were younger, it really kind of gets at that, like that question when you discover is like, I did draw 200 like sketches of that tree, and maybe there was something, there was something beyond drawing me to it. So I mentioned a book, and I think it's, I mean, I'm a book junkie. I recently moved all my books. And one of the things I said to somebody who was by me, I said, hey, look, as you get older, your obsessions, including books, can keep compiling, and they can keep aggregating. And the amount of books I had was a testament to obsession. So bottom line, I enjoy books, and you've written Whispers for Terra, mm-hmm. and put out that book, and you said you've journaled, but let's talk about a book. Let's talk about the book.
Okay.
You know, you set that out as a, you set that out and said, hey, I'm gonna write this book. What was going on? Why did you feel the need to do that? And what was that process like, moving from journaling or shorter writing to a more extensive book project?
Yeah, it was fairly daunting for me because I had never really entertained the idea of writing a book. I just always told myself I couldn't do that. I didn't have a story. And I never thought I could write dialogue. And I took a online writing class during one of my spring breaks and several different speakers, you know, an hour long a day. And throughout that process, I realized, I was like, maybe I do have a story in me because I was able to jot down enough ideas. And then one of those speakers serendipitously, Sage Adderley, came through with an email and said, hey, I'm offering this idea outline course that's free. And then I'm offering book in 90, where you write your first draft in 90 days. And I was like, you know, why not? You know, let's give this a shot. So I was pretty amazed, actually, with things that flowed onto the paper. And it was really sitting down and doing that outline to start with, even though it wasn't very well defined, you know, but I had enough ideas. And there was a Neil Gaiman book, Gaiman, I'm not sure how we say his name, that wrote American Gods.
I've heard his name pronounced both ways, yes. Yeah,
so, okay.
Yeah.
He, in the intro to American Gods, he made a statement that he had all these little snippets of ideas, from some from dreams, some from just ideas. And he was like, how do I put these all into one book? And they just magically did. And that was kind of the way mine got started, was I wanted something to do with nature and earth. And I wanted a speech pathologist in there, because we often are misunderstood in what we do in our careers. And so I just knew I had these things I wanted to bring in. So.
Yeah. Well, it's great to hear about how you're able to pull it in that way. Mm-hmm. One of the pieces of the show that has come up that I'm deeply interested in personally, but also, you know, what it does for anybody who encounters it, is just the general idea of healing or connection to nature. You know, during the course of the pandemic, what's happened for me is I walk a lot more, and I go into the woods more or more deliberately as I can. Can you talk about that? I've had a guest or two talk about, forest bathing, immersion within the forest, cleansing in a spiritual and emotional way. Can you get into those pieces for you personally and within the story of what's going on, what catharsis, what's going on by going into the woods for you, for the character, for you?
You know, I grew up loving nature. My dad and I would take a lot of walks, and we lived pretty rurally. I always saw little creatures in our garden, and imagined, you know, that the things were alive that were in there. So I've just always enjoyed being out in nature, a lot of camping in my life. And I feel a peacefulness that, you know, and a clarity when I'm out in the woods. And, you know, for my character, Mary, it's where she finds respite from, you know, just a hectic, somewhat life that she feels dismay over. And so for me, the woods just always bring a sense of calm. And I recently did a forest bathing experience. And I was talking with some people about how amazing that was, because especially, I don't know if it's everywhere, but definitely out here in Colorado, you know, we're always hiking to get to, you know, we do 14ers and we do power sort of hikes and that type of thing. It's, and never stopping to look around. And in the forest bathing experience, if we walked a half mile in 2 hours, I'd be shocked. I think it was more like a quarter mile. And we sat by the river for a long time, and we listened and used all the five senses. And I really have made a point of trying to build more of that into my life after doing that, because it's, you know, I've always seen faces and that sort of thing in trees. I've always noticed things, but I feel like recently I see more life. You know, I drive by trees and I feel like, wow, they're glowing more than they used to. So I feel like I'm waking up to nature after writing my book, you know, because some of it was fantasy. Well, a lot of it was, like the talking part. But
well, and I think with within that, you know, which is which, I think that's part of the magic or the mystery. I've had guests on talking about that experience and, you know, and what is actually in there, and how you as a person are experiencing, right, with greater realization.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I know I had an interview with Zoe Presley, who does tours and integrates psychology and such into the forest bathing experience. And for listeners, forest bathing experience in general is the idea of physically going into the forest or connecting with nature, even a small component of nature. And as Nancy had said, using your senses for a more immersive contact mm-hmm. with the world, I guess, is the general summary. So mm-hmm. thank you for your thoughts on that, Nancy. There's another component that I wanted to get in, like, towards the beginning in chatting with you is your professional work. As we had a brief discussion, I work with, you know, different type of workers in the work that I do professionally. And I was wondering if you could kind of give listeners a little bit of a sense to something they might not come in contact with as much as the practice of a speech and language practitioner and mm-hmm. Just some of that work that you've done, because I know when I mentioned that to folks outside of, say, maybe the education or K-12 system, it's not quite clear some of the things. It's not a job that's that well known. So I was wondering if you could make a few comments on that component of what you do.
Yeah, just stop me when I go on too long. speech pathology, it's been a wonderful field for me. You know, I've done it for 40 years and I've never been bored with it. And I worked in healthcare for 20 years and I worked in clinics. I worked with all age groups, but 10 years I specialized in the skilled nursing facilities, and, you know, which really did draw a lot of the stories from just, you know, bulk of experiences, 10 years in that, you know, that I inserted, you know, into the book. But it's really about communication, and, you know, it morphs into other things, but they all really relate back to communication, whether it's working with patients with dementia or with neurological diseases, or helping people with their voice quality, the gender of voices, and helping people be the best communicators that they can within whatever limits they have, whatever resources they have. You know, there's augmentative communication where people use devices to communicate. And then you get into the school age population, and, you know, notoriously we're known for working on S&R sounds, and it's so much broader than that. And, you know, it's working as much with executive functioning skills as well, all those things that go into the way we think, the critical thinking skills, in order to be able to convey deeper, more expansive sort of thoughts, and social communication. There's so many, many speech pathologists have written lists and lists and lists, and they do wordles about all the things that we work on. But it really boils back down to the power of communication and helping give that, you know, the best that people can do, give them that ability.
Yeah. Thank you for that work. I've become more attuned personally, at least in creating to the, you know, within a podcast, you know, primarily audio, and thinking about the mm-hmm. sound of the voice, as opposed to, you know, my deep love and fascination is, you know, movies or games, integration of video and sound. But I found with the podcast, I've been able to think more about just the sound of the human mm-hmm. voice. And so I'm deeply curious, and it was very helpful to hear your description in getting into that, of how fundamental that is, and mm-hmm. you know, to help people along to be able to say and communicate and express. That's kind of, I don't know, sometimes it feels like that's kind of like the main thing we're always trying to do, right?
Well, you know, I think it is, you know, it it is a gift, and it's interesting for me now to be thinking about how so much of nature communicates with one another, and the similarities in, like, the underground network of you know, mycelium and that sort of thing, and how it parallels to our own brain, you know, interfacing and the internet and all of those, that it's, you know, in some ways we're just an extension of the communication network of what there is, you know, yeah, already existing in nature. We learned it much later than nature did to communicate.
I don't know exactly what the answers are, but I might share a belief. We might share a belief that I think they're going to be found in the woods. I don't know what they are as we ask these big questions, but I think the location of where we may encounter them would be the woods. Okay. Mm-hmm. Nancy, we're speaking with Nancy Hauser Bloom. She's done a book, a very good book, and a very unique book, Whispers for Terra. And one of the things, Nancy, as you know, we're going to kind of delve into a couple bigger conceptual questions and talk mm-hmm. about art. In the show, I'm always interested in creation, how things are created, you know, why they created, what they're supposed to do for us humans. But I wanted to ask you the big question in creation or creating things is about art. I wanted to ask you what is art?
You know, for me, I think it is the inner expression, the inner feelings of what people have that they need to express outwardly, you know, is what, you know, I believe art is. You know, I think that it something that needs to be shared. People feel a real, they feel compelled to share it in some form, and it's a reflection of our own self and our beliefs. And I think it's part of the reason that artists can feel so vulnerable when they put it out there, because it's really, I find, a reflection of something that they care deeply about, feel deeply. And so it is, there's so many different ways that it can be manifested, demonstrated, but it's always something from inside the artist
yeah.
that they want to express. So communicate.
Yeah, communicate. Thank you for that. And I think it anticipates, and I never want to answer the question for you, but I ask an attendant question to what is art, is about what is its role? Mm-hmm. What does it do for us? You mentioned communication, but what's art supposed to do for us as humans? Why do we need it around us?
Well, I think it shows us, it can amaze us. I think it gives us a level of amazement of our world. It helps us consider things that we might not be considering. I think it can be a common ground for many people. When you're standing and looking at a Van Gogh or something, and there's somebody next to you you don't know their beliefs, you don't know their politics, you don't know anything, but it's common ground at that moment in time. Yeah. You have a commonality, and I think art can really bring people together and provide insights that people haven't thought about, look at things in a different perspective, a different angle than what they had before.
Yeah, I appreciate that too. I was talking recently about, like, you know, I'm a components of, like, gaming, the art that goes into video games, the immersive experience, mm-hmm. and how you can have, I'm not trying to like build it up to something that it's not, but just the idea of as you know, people interact or players interact, there is some cross-cultural, contact and communication mm-hmm. of the thing that you're doing. Sports, sometimes people say sports do that. You're playing the same sport together. You don't know the language. Or like you said, if you're in front of a Van Gogh and your jaw is dropped like a quarter, and the person next to you, their jaw is dropped like a quarter. Like, you're like, oh my God, it's like you're trying to explain it, but like that person's like in a very similar space than I am right now,
right.
being like, mm-hmm. what the hell, like, am I looking at? How does that make sense? Why, how does this exist, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right, and, yeah. So it can definitely shift our thinking, you know, about people. It can shift our thinking about, you know, anything going on in the world. You know, it, I think art is very important. And, you know, I think it's sad anytime you think about that it's not, that sometimes due to budgets, it could get removed, you know, from the schools, any of the arts, the music, any of that, you know, because I think it gives an avenue to people to express things that maybe they're not expressing in traditional manner. So,
I think sometimes when I see an integrated idea of like within teaching or education where art is, you know, integrated and what it does for the brain. I was having a conversation with an artist and talking about bringing art or like the idea of bringing art into organizing or labor organizing for mm-hmm. him. It was such a weird idea because he's like, it's the constituent property. Like art is the constituent property of how we educate, of how we organize, of creating things to pull people together. And there's something where we've got kind of lost or there's not enough art that we're trying to like impose it from the outside and be like, where's the art in here? Where he sort of is more foundational of an artful way of looking at teaching or education. And, you know, as a professional educator, you know, in with the speech and language, the creativity and the art that goes into that, we start to think a little bit more expansively. Nancy, I want to jump back again here, back to sometimes it's viewed a little bit more of another origin question, but there's a personal aspect in your blogging and what you create and what you talk about. What I wanted to ask you is who or what made you who you are?
I think I would have to start with my family life growing up. You know, we had just kind of a typical middle class family, but it was we had lots of good rituals and routines, and, you know, we weren't like a Leave It to Beaver family or anything like that, but, you know, it was a pretty easygoing family, and we had family drama, but we were all, you know, pretty close and, you know, had relatives and other close friends. So I think it gave me a space to explore and think about things where people that, you know, are not as lucky and they have more, they live in, you know, poverty, or they live in, you know, wondering where their next meal is coming from, or they have trauma in their life, you know, they're in survival mode. And I think I was able to grow up looking around, you know, was not a big dreamer. I didn't have that sort of life, but I did feel like it afforded me the opportunity to look around and explore, kind of be in my head, you know, a good amount of time. And then you know, I dedicated my book to all those people who say those incidental things to you along the way that just give you that glimmer of hope. So when things are not good, you can repeat that. Oh, I remember when that teacher said this to me, or something like that. There's so many instances of those that we hold on to through those difficult times. I think that definitely helped shape me. And then to set me on the path for communication, it was communication 101, you know, in college. I had a teacher named Dave Fredericks, and he really challenged us about, I grew up in this Gidget mindset of communication, you know, where there was always something not said. If you just asked the question, you could have found out what that person was thinking, but it was kind of the mind reading mode. That if they care about you, if they know you, they're going to know what you're thinking or feeling. And so I had this incident where another teacher had given us such a hard test that everybody either got a D or failed it. And we were all, you know, like ruffled, and he wanted us to fail. And he didn't, you know, but this teacher was telling us, you don't know what that guy's thinking until you go and ask him. And he challenged another classmate and I to go talk to the teacher. And he was a wonderful man. We knew that, but we thought he really wanted us to fail. And he was so devastated by our coming to him and saying that, because he said, I teach because I love it. I want to teach geography to people. I want them to learn. And I was astounded, because I was like, I was so sure that I knew what he was thinking, and I didn't. And that just blew my communication style out of the water, I think. Yeah. And so that was probably one of the most instrumental that set me on the path of, and it took years really to keep developing that skill and to get past my Gidget mindset. But I feel like I know now that if I really want to know what somebody's thinking, I have to ask them. And that was really an instrumental point in my life. So,
yeah, gosh, I love that. I love that story. I do. Yeah. And I think, you mentioned just kind of some of those incidents or something that seems somebody said in passing that, mm-hmm. that kind of never went away. I think, sometimes within education, I always love that statement. I've seen it here or there, and it's, you know, a picture of a kid, and it said, you know, my teacher said I was smart, so I was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like,
yeah,
words and communication, how when somebody says, hey, this is what I see, and they might not even be thinking that much of it, it's just a reality for them, and you hear it and you're like, I didn't know I was that until that person said that.
Oh.
I didn't know that I stuck out in that way or anything, you know, it's
right.
Pretty special, right?
Yes, definitely. I think it's a critical, it's one of the, I don't know, the best things, you know, that teachers do is give belief, you know, in oneself to their students. And so it's very instrumental when, you know, what teachers' words, you know, teach words matter, you know, that teachers' words really matter to their kids. So,
yeah. I got a different question, Nancy, that it's been knocking around in my brain a little bit. I didn't tell you what it was, but I think you'll have a quick, I hope you have okay. a quick answer. But like I said, anytime books are around, I can, as a book junkie, I can jump into things. But I was wondering, as a creator, you're starting to write, you're running into some trouble here or there. You're like, how the heck do I write? Did you in your mind think of a writer or a technique, or go back to some, if you got stuck, to say, you know, think of other writers? Because writers are always thinking of other writers. Did you ever, how'd you get, if you got stuck or got caught somewhere, did you rely on something in your head to kind of pull you back?
You know, probably not so much in my head, but one of the things that was brought up in the writer's group I was in was not to be a lone wolf. And I was someone that, you know, I'm someone that I feel like if I was a good writer, I should be able to just write it all by myself. I don't have to consult or, you know, I knew I had to research, but I should just know what to do. And, you know, some of the best things were conversations with some friends and with my husband. And I was saying, I don't know how to make this tree alive, you know, and we would just have a glass of wine and we'd discuss it and we'd brainstorm. And, you know, his whole family is really super creative. And I have friends that would say, I think you need something whimsical in there. And, you know, so for me with the writing, and then when I'd get stuck, I would go out for a bike ride or walk my dog, and I would just get in, you know, ask myself that question, you know, what should Mary do next to the, how should she respond to that? And then I would come up with an answer. So some of it was a little serendipitous, but some of it was really reaching out and being open to feedback from other people and other people's ideas. It was kind of a, that was a real learning thing for me to be able to reach out and say, hey, I'm stuck here. What do you think? And sometimes I'd use the ideas and sometimes they just spurred another great idea. So,
well, it's a great step. And I know how I think it would feel clumsy to most anybody, you know, making that step and being like, hey, what does this look like? Or reaching out. And I can say for myself personally, that's a big step. And I think a lot of folks who create when they've done that, I know when I've been around an environment in getting that energy or feedback or being in the environment where you're like, this would work or this wouldn't work. There's this verve to it that can help you pull you through. So,
right.
I'm going to thank you. Thank you for that. So again, we're talking with Nancy Hauser Bloom, writer, works speech and language, communication mm-hmm. overall, trying to communicate. Nancy, as you know, on this question, there's some big questions. And the biggest one, which I have to ask, is can you tell me why there's something rather than nothing?
When it's in my book, I feel like the book is something rather than nothing because it does raise up some real issues about our earth. But I believe like in life in general is something rather than nothing, but I have a personal belief in an afterlife that we probably don't know what it's going to look like, but I kind of believe in reincarnation. And I believe what we do in this life, the things we say, we don't know what things are important. And so we may as well treat life like most things are important. And that in some way, what we do will be used later on, and that we will benefit from just being good people in the world. And being, so I think being good is something rather than nothing.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for that answer. I wanted to ask you, I feel like sometimes when I've had guests on, there's always a lot more we can go, you know, into the deeper ecological, environmental, you know, concerns of the age that we live in. And one of the things that I found, and I just wanted some comments from you is that I feel, and a lot of folks that I'm around feel that like on an environment in general, we're screwed. Number one. Two, we can unscrew ourselves, maybe, but looking around other people then hang their head again and being like, well, the what we do at this moment. You know, since, you know, the woods and the environment, you know, in your writing for yourself is so, you know, deeply important and vital, and I share that as well. What are your thoughts on what we're trying to protect, on, you know, the ability to go into the woods and for them to be, you know, the woods for us and for us to care for them and protect them?
Well, I feel like everybody, if you pick one thing, there are, and I bring this up in the book, and, you know, I got it from other research I had done, that there's so many things out there that need to be done, so many tacks we could take in trying to improve our world, our climate change. And if everybody latched on to, and really took on a charge with some aspect of it, we'd be moving things forward. You know, whether it's the soil or whether it is the water or the plastics or whatever, you know, the multitude of things that there are. And it can feel overwhelming and defeating because it's like, you know, that game where you bop something on the head and it goes down, you know, and it pops up somewhere else. Yes, yes, it's like that. It feels like it's, you know, insurmountable. But if everybody really stayed moving forward with whatever the aspect of the earth they take on, I think things would, because there's so much life we don't know about in the ocean. And, you know, then there's, you know, the atmosphere and, you know, the woods for me and for many people, you know, provide so much, they give as much as we get, you know, we get so much from them, but they give us so much more emotionally, health-wise, everything. So I would love more people to take the importance of that on. And I think it's happening. to some degree. You know, I just love when I hear about New York City having gardens on rooftops and that type of thing, yeah. because I feel like, you know, all of those things can come together to make a bigger difference, but it sounds insurmountable. And we have maybe gone too far, you know, to ever be able to go back to square one, but, you know, with things, but I think with awareness and the more books that, and more information that's out there that raises awareness, we might do what art does and impact and shift some thinking.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And I appreciate that. I appreciate your comments. And I know it's a monster of an issue, but I do appreciate your thoughts on it because, like I said, the premise I think of our conversation was how important that can be to the psychology of humans or a connection or a certain harmony, you know, that we're able to get from that. And, you know, maybe that space can help, you know, protect it too, by going into that space and clearing our head. All right. So Nancy, in finishing up here, what I wanted to ask you is, you got the book out, you do other projects and journal and stuff. So how can folks find, you know, what you're doing, find the book, learn about, you know, maybe they learn a little bit about, speech and language or in communication? Where do folks go to find you?
I have a website, nancyhauserbloom.com, and the blog is called Minderings. I love blended words. Minderings is a place for the wandering of your mind.
Yeah.
So that's the blog and the website. And my email is n.hauserbloom@gmail.com. So any of those, the book's on Amazon, it's in bookstores. I really want to put a shout out to, because I live rurally, so I do a lot of online ordering, but, you know, indie bookstores are such a delight, and any bookstore can order the book. So, and I guess I should say, because a lot of people confuse Tara with like T-A-R-A, like from, you know, Gone with the Wind, and Tara is T-E-R-R-A.
So. Whispers for Tara. Yeah, thank you.
Yes.
Thank you for that. And I'm glad folks will be able to find your wonderful book, and that is generally available. And of course, however you know, choose to purchase it, but this is an indie podcast, and I have spent a decent percentage of my life in indie bookstores and indie comic bookstores. So there is that, the best place probably to find. Nancy, I wanted to thank you so much for coming on to the show. As you could hear in the questions I asked, there are different components of what you do and what you think about that helped me, and I think can help listeners kind of think about the issues that we talk about. But thank you for creating, and thank you for taking the risks that you have. You know, it's clear, you know, any artist takes risks, but I know you've had to take some to put this out there. And thank you for taking those, because, you know, that gets us to this conversation and kind of like looking at things more deeply. So I wanted to thank you deeply for coming on to the podcast.
And I want to thank you for having me and, you know, taking a chance, because I am new to this, you know, arena. And I also really appreciate the work you do on a day-to-day basis, you know, with helping people in the schools and that sort of thing, because, you know, we need friends, we need supporters and people that, you know, really try to raise up the importance of what people in the school systems do. So we appreciate your work too.
Yeah. Thank you. I know there's, you can always put more into, you always put more effort. I mean, working people, no matter what you do, working people, it wasn't easy before the pandemic. It isn't easier during the pandemic. And so I'll keep plugging away, and you do likewise. Nancy Hauser Bloom in their book, Whispers for Tara, which you can find in order online or get through your local bookstore. Thanks again, Nancy, for coming on, and certainly hope to see more art from you coming soon.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Take care.
Okay. Bye.
This is Something Rather Than Nothing.